funding for Think comes from SMU Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What can we understand about the terrible events of the weekend President Kennedy was assassinated by revisiting the places where those events took place? And what can we learn about the ways our own communities have evolved since 1963? My guests today are all deeply invested in both the history and the future of North Texas. Willis Winters is director of the Dallas Park and Recreation Department. Mark Doty is historic preservation officer for the City of Dallas. And John H. Slate is city archivist for the City of Dallas and a co-author of books with each of our other two guests. The one with Willis Winters is called Dealey Plaza, and the one with Mark Doty is John F. Kennedy Sites in Dallas-Fort Worth. Gentlemen, welcome back to Think.
Thank you, Chris.
So there's no question that of the reality that the Kennedy assassination has become like a major tourist draw for this part of Texas. Is that something that we should feel morally conflicted about today?
Well, you can't change history. So I would say that it's the way that I look at it is the way that the Sixth Floor Museum came about. And it was an attempt to help people make sense of it and understand what happened there, historically factual information about what happened there. And it evolved over a number of years, but it's become an important tourist site. I think it's second to the Alamo in tourism in Texas. So, you know, the people are going to come whether we're ready or not.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose all of this represents our own coming to terms with what took place half a century ago.
Well, I think that's what's happening in Dallas this year, Chris. Mm-hmm. It's hard to believe that it's been 50 years since the event, and Dealey Plaza and the city certainly has gotten over the years a certain negative aspect, if you will, to it. And I think that's one of the things that John and I wanted to do with the Dealey Plaza book is to talk about the history of the site prior to the assassination, because there is an incredibly rich history. Spent a brief amount of time on the event itself, and in the book that John and Mark wrote, deal with the assassination sites, which is an incredibly rich subject in Dallas and Fort Worth.
Dealey Plaza is fascinating. What was there before it was designated Dealey Plaza? Because it really is sort of at the heart of what has become the city of Dallas.
Yeah. Well, I think it goes back to the earliest origin of the town, founded by John Neely Bryan in the early 1840s. It was what today is Dealey Plaza is the original town site for what would become the city of Dallas. And John actually wrote the chapter on that, so I'll let him talk more about the early history of the site.
Yeah, it's really kind of amazing when you think about it, how much history in the Dallas, North Texas area is contained within those two blocks. It does, as Willis said, it contains the story of John Neely Bryan, Dealey Plaza itself, the area when, before the levees were produced. It was a bluff that overlooked a low water crossing, so it was an Indian trace. I mean, it's got, you know, Native American history. It's got pioneer settler history, and it's got interesting business history. There were agricultural implement businesses. There were livery stables. There were cattle auctions. Just about everything you could think of, since this was just off of the courthouse square.
And it was also an important transportation site in Dallas because it was where Sarah Cockrell built the first bridge over the Trinity floodplain. So there's a lot going on in this area. And one of the – to bring that to the current day, the Park Department and the city have been restoring Dealey Plaza over the last year to bring it up into the best condition possible. We were recently excavating in one of the fountains along Houston Street and uncovered a stone-lined well that probably dates to the earliest origin of Dallas in the early 1840s.
And all that, the sort of legend about Dallas existing here for no good reason is kind of nonsense, right? There was transportation coming through here, and the river was an important mode of transportation.
Well, I think whenever John Neely Bryan came to Dallas or founded the site, he was hoping that the Trinity could support riverboat traffic or traffic up from the Gulf, and he realized that it couldn't do that. And so he established a trading post, and it wasn't really until the railroads came in the 1870s that Dallas really started to grow. But it became the county seat, and you know where Old Red Courthouse is today, that has historically always been the county seat. I think, you know, going back to an earlier point, I think people forget that we had an actual courthouse square mm-hmm. in Dallas, and it's been changed so much over the years, with the eastern half of it being created for Dealey Plaza now. But I mean, we had a old southern, you know, courthouse square there at one time.
Yeah, the public market was there. The first open public markets were there. There were livestock auctions out on the courthouse. There was just a lot of different activity there. And all of the major businesses of early Dallas all faced the courthouse square on the adjoining streets.
It's hard to imagine what is today Dealey Plaza, what we know it is today, which is this kind of strange triangular-shaped lawns that slope down to go under the railroad crossing. Originally, that was a flat piece of land filled with downtown commercial buildings that evolved over time. So it's a very, very different character from what it is today.
Somebody mentioned the Old Red Courthouse. It's funny that we think of it that way today because, of course, it's like the new Red Courthouse. Fire was a very big deal in sort of shaping and reshaping downtown for a long time.
Yeah, we had the really big fire, I guess, in 1860 that destroyed the majority of the business district. And then it seemed like every courthouse built, you know, burned. And even though whenever they were supposedly fireproof, they still burned. So fire was definitely a major component in that development of that area of downtown.
What was the original plan for Dealey Plaza? Like, what was the vision for the sort of space that it would be? And the function that it would serve for residents of the city?
Well, it was a very visionary plan, first of all. It was based on transportation and the linkage between downtown Dallas and to the west on the state highway to the Fort Worth Pike and to Fort Worth. So we had Elm Street, Main Street, Commerce Street kind of terminating at the original, the original water's edge. And the first thing that happened is that the river was moved, physically moved, about a mile to the west to get the floodplain away from downtown. That was a product of the George Kessler plan for Dallas and that recommendation from 1911. Then the next trick was to get the three major east-west streets over or under the railroad tracks that were feeding into Union Station, which was built in about 1916, 1917. The state did a lot of studies on that and determined that the only feasible way, rather than going over, was to go under. And that's where the idea of this triple underpass came about. It was actually called a subway for a while. So the three streets going under the railroad tracks is the origin of this underpass terminology. They had to do that was quite a feat of engineering. They first of all had to figure out how much length they needed of the streets to have the proper gradient to get the streets under the railroad tracks. That meant they had to push the railroad tracks 125 feet to the west to get the length they needed. They then had to bore under the railroad tracks and pour this concrete underpass, build the new tracks on top of it, and only then could they excavate the 65,000 cubic yards of soil so that the three streets could then be rebuilt, sloping down to pass under the railroad tracks. A very, very interesting and ambitious project, and it sort of created this new western portal into downtown Dallas from visitors coming from the west and from Fort Worth.
And I might add that it was finished within just weeks of the opening of the Texas Centennial Exposition. So it was an incredible source of pride for not just the city but the state. And everything was done on time and everything came out beautifully.
So had Dallasites, John, at that point not yet developed their penchant for sort of really debating whether this sort of thing, whether the can-do attitude meant messing with nature or changing things around, was there a great deal of disagreement over these plans and how they would play out?
Well, as far as the rerouting of the Trinity, I don't think there was any question about it. The major floods throughout the 19th century and then, of course, the really big one in 1908, which had a pretty big loss amount of loss of life and
so it felt
property.
Like no choice.
Yeah. And when Kessler basically said, you know, we need to do this, it took them a few more, another 10 years or so to do this, but it came about in the 1928 Ulrichsen plan, in the which was then the largest bond package in city history.
So the building within Dealey Plaza or on Dealey Plaza that became known as the Texas School Book Depository and now is the sixth floor museum at Dealey Plaza and also some county offices has an interesting history as well. It had a variety of iterations over the years.
Yeah, it was the Southern Plow Implement office building, and it was, you know, the West End at that time was developing as the largest farm implementation distribution center in the Southwest. And so you had those types of uses. Companies coming in from Chicago and St. Louis that were building up buildings to, you know, warehouses to then supply all the rest of the Southwest, really from Dallas. So it became a really a hub of local activity. So that's how the building was originally constructed.
Mark, would farmers come to town to sort of look at the new demonstration models and pick out what they wanted, or did they wait for county fairs and the state fair to do that sort of thing?
Well, I think they probably did both. I mean, I've seen historic images of, again, the courthouse square, and it was lined with, you know, farmers bringing in their cotton crops and everything else. So, I mean, it was – I think people kind of forget that ag side and history of Dallas a lot. Because, you know, the oil and the banking really have taken precedence over the last 50 years or so. And, of course, you know, the state fair and stuff like that would also be a major time for people to come into town as well.
How did people use the park in Dealey Plaza once it was finished? Was it a spot for picnics or for hanging out? What took place there?
I'm not sure that people picnicked there just because of the nature of the sloping lawn and our, you know, the orientation to the west and the sun and temperature and
sort
everything.
Sort of looking at the freeway. And,
yeah, it was. Mm-hmm. I think it was a sort of a transportation pass-through park to admire from your automobile as you were zipping into and out of Dallas towards Fort Worth.
What could be more like in line sort of with the kind of place that we became?
Exactly. This is what I think triggered. This is the first major transportation project in our city's history, and it kind of set us on the course towards this, reliance on the automobile.
And then really whenever Central Expressway then came on, you know, in the mid-40s as well, that just started the entire explosion growth really to the north and to the east, you know, all the suburbs developing the way that they did. So it's funny at how people always complain about how car-centric Dallas is, but we've always been car-centric. I mean, we've always been in love with our automobiles, and the city really has grown that way. And so it's amazing that we've come as far as we have with some of the bike lanes and everything else coming online, that we're trying to kind of undo 70 years of building our city, you know, to facilitate the car.
And in our defense, we're a relatively young city. You know, places like Boston and New York were well entrenched by the time automobiles came along. We were still pretty small before that time.
And we have the land and the space. We have really, you know, aside from the Trinity, really, which we kind of tamed, we have no natural, you know, impediment, no mountains, no ocean or anything. So that just led us, you know, to be able to sprawl wherever we wanted to.
We've been talking about Dealey Plaza. We will talk about other sites associated with the John F. Kennedy assassination in just a moment. My guests this hour are John Slate, city archivist for the City of Dallas, Mark Doty, historic preservation officer for the City of Dallas, and Willis Winters, director of the Dallas Park and Recreation Department. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this fall to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in global studies, creative writing, and organizational dynamics. You can learn more at smu.edu/mls.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Mark Doty, who is Historic Preservation Officer for the City of Dallas, and John Slate, City Archivist for the City of Dallas. Together, they are co-authors of John F. Kennedy Sites in Dallas and Fort Worth. Willis Winters is here as well. He directs the Dallas Park and Recreation Department. He and John Slate wrote a book called Dealey Plaza. If you'd like to join the conversation, call in to 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. So I want to move on and talk a little bit about some other JFK-related sites in the area. Our good friends in Fort Worth are always quick to remind us that the Kennedys had some warm welcomes there and spent time there on this weekend that we remember and only associate, frankly, negatively with Dallas. What destinations in Fort Worth were on the itinerary there?
Well, one thing that actually surprised me that is not really is not looked at more or considered enough is the fact that Kennedy that the Kennedys came in and flew in through Carswell Air Force Base, which is now a deactivated base. It's now the Naval Air Station, but the people are still there who grew up and lived around the area, and if you go to the River Oaks Public Library on the west side of Fort Worth, they have a little Kennedy room that is devoted to the history of Kennedy's visit, and that sparked my interest for one thing. But what surprises me is the lack of photography of their landing at and leaving from Carswell. I mean, of course, they came under nightfall when they came in from Houston on the 21st. But the so obviously there wasn't much. There was a little news film, but the following day when they were at the hotel downtown and came back and to Carswell, they had a big parade and you know, just like they had here. And it's just surprising that there isn't more documentation of it. But there are a few really nice photos.
I wonder if more existed, but it didn't take on the sort of character of a historic document, and so people weren't inclined necessarily to share it. I wonder if people out there might have prints of things that...
I bet there's a lot hiding.
They're going to come out of the woodwork now.
Yep.
You'll be getting calls, John, very soon.
Well, I love the story about the Kennedys arriving at their room in the Hotel Texas and finding that Ruth Carter, then Ruth Carter Johnson, later Ruth Carter Stevenson, had essentially curated an exhibition for them of fine art.
Yeah, they had actually were supposed to be set up in the presidential suite or kind of the nicer rooms. And I think the Secret Service had some concerns with that setup, and so they moved them to another set of rooms lower down in the hotel. And whenever the citizens of Fort Worth came and kind of looked at the hotel room before, they were like, well, maybe we can do a little bit better with this. And so they called their friends up on the phones, like, you know, could we borrow this or could we borrow that? And they really did a fantastic job of trying to present this cultural side of not only Fort Worth but Texas, that, you know, we had these patrons and, you know, benefactors that were very interested in the arts. And, you know, the Dallas Museum of Art currently has that exhibit up right now that kind of recreates that room and what exactly was located there.
It's interesting as well because it speaks to a time when people in North Texas were concerned that the rest of the country didn't see us as sort of cultured in the way that I think today we might take for granted.
They assembled in a fairly amazing little art show for that dreary, drab hotel room that they were in at the Hotel Texas. And I encourage everybody to go to the DMA and see this exhibit. I think it's this is its last week.
I think it's through the September 15th.
Okay. Moves to Fort Worth after that. It's a very important exhibit.
It's moving for one thing because you're looking at things, you know, that were some of the last things that Kennedy got to enjoy. Mm-hmm. But on top of that, it's really kind of quaint because it demonstrates that like we said, that Texas was, and particularly in North Texas, we really wanted to put our best foot forward and show that we had some kind of culture here.
Was it just for logistical reasons that it was decided that the Kennedys would – the thought of flying a very large aircraft like Air Force One from Carswell Air Force Base to Love Field, it seems like it would be hard to even get up in the air high enough to make that trip. Was it security? Do any of you know the reason for that?
I assumed it was just expediency and mm-hmm. time. It doesn't seem like it would make sense to make that short flight, but I think they probably saved an hour or two.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember why he was at one reason he was at Carswell was to talk about the defense industry and the aircraft industry. And so that was the home of one of the major bombing groups. And if you remember, this is still Cold War. So Kennedy's visiting the heart of the aircraft industry in North Texas was actually quite a big deal. And so that would explain Fort Worth. And in fact, if you look at the text of his speech at the Hotel Texas, it is all about the defense industry and, you know, good job and keep doing what you're doing, that kind of thing. Keep pushing America forward in technology. And as a matter of fact, the speech he was going to give in Dallas that he never got to give was also about research and technology. And it was being hosted by the Southwestern Research Center, which is what became UT Dallas.
So that speech that would have taken place would have been at the Trademart. So how is the building very similar to what it was in 1963? I mean, to what extent have the facilities changed over there?
Well, if you look at the book, you can tell the sign is virtually unchanged. Mm-hmm. It just blew my mind how it's been pretty much untouched.
One of the interesting things about the Trademart that very few people recognize or realize is it was one of the first grand atrium buildings in the United States. This predates John Portman and his atrium projects in Atlanta. This was a Trammell Crow facility. It had this magnificent open atrium, the full height of the building, and with these great catwalks and suspended corridors, walkways across. I think it's basically unchanged on the interior and very little on the exterior. I think they added a top floor at some point in the 1980s, but it's virtually the same building.
Is that as much a factor of its historical significance as its architectural significance?
Well, I think it's architecturally significant. It was designed by a Dallas architect named Harwell Hamilton Harris, who was a very, very important modernist designer that was in Dallas for about 5 years. He was previously dean of the University of Texas School of Architecture in the 50s, came to Dallas for a short while, and then moved on to the East Coast. And while he was here, he designed some very important houses and buildings, of which the Trademart is one of them.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. If you've got a question about any of the sites associated with the Kennedy assassination in 1963. So, of course, we know that, this sort of now, sadly, infamous route from Love Field to downtown and then through the Triple Underpass. They went quite slowly, I guess, along the entire route, and there were people pretty much lining the streets the entire time.
I think they estimated close to 200,000 people. Is that right, John, close to that? I think 200,000.
I'm not sure of the exact amount, but it was a large gathering. For anyone who wants to think that Kennedy didn't receive a good welcome, there were a lot of people here.
And there was a lot of debate, I think, of how the route should go because, you know, the Trademart and Left Field are very close together. And so I think some people really wanted them to just go straight to the Trademart. But there were a lot in, you know, Kennedy's party and even with, you know, associated with John Connally, the governor at the time, that they really wanted to, show off, the president, especially Jackie. You know, Jackie was in town. And so, I think that's why they took a little more of the circuitous route through downtown, going down Mockingbird, Lemon. But you had school children that were let out. There's a great picture in, I think, both Dealey Plaza and JFK sites that the nuns let the school children out at St. Anne's School to, see the motorcade pass by as it, came into downtown down Harwood Street. Yeah. And then some of my favorite images actually are of the crowds that were downtown. I mean, just had, 10 or 20 deep people that just – I mean, it was – and they could – there was virtually no barricade. I mean, they didn't stop traffic on Main Street. I mean, you had cars, you had people that could come literally touch the car. And it was just amazing at just the amount of, you know, people hanging out windows and opening windows and, you know, looking out. And it had that kind of an air of a huge parade, really, which is what it was supposed to do.
Yeah, there's an informality that you see in the photos that you just will never see again, ever.
Well, for obvious and tragic reasons.
Right, sure.
You know, given what happened, I mean, I'm sure it was an amazing experience for the crowd, and then we sort of realized that you can't have that space open like that. Talk about, okay, so the shooting happened. Parkland Hospital became nationally famous sort of overnight. And, of course, Parkland is now being rebuilt, and the old facilities are gone, and the rooms where Kennedy was treated have actually been removed and preserved, and that happened actually some time ago.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I was speaking with someone from the Federal Records Center, which is one of the branches of the National Archives that's in Fort Worth, and I think they had the room packaged up. This meant everything, all of the, you know, the gurneys, all of the equipment, the tiles. So literally this entire room was completely deconstructed, and I believe the National Archives, I believe they sent it to – it's now living in St. Louis is the last I've heard.
But it's not on display. It's just warehoused somewhere?
No.
And I think all that there is at Parkland is just a plaque, and I think there's even some debate about – where exactly that room, we kind of know the general location of it, but I think since Parkland's been renovated so many times over the years that I think it's even kind of lost that configuration of what it was that day.
Mm-hmm. Lee Harvey Oswald moved around a lot, not simply on the day of the shooting, but he had a number of addresses in Fort Worth and in Dallas and in the mid-cities. Talk about some of the more interesting places that actually that still exist today that are associated with him.
Go ahead. Well, I mean, almost all of his rooming houses are still extant. They're all standing except for the one on Elsbeth that was taken down earlier this year. So probably four of his rooming houses that he had there, and three are at least still standing.
Yeah, few of them have any real architectural significance, but of course they have that George Washington slept here quality. And you know, people want to see and touch history, and that's why we're so interested in it and in putting it in our book.
Have they been pretty much consecutively occupied? I mean, it's funny. You can say George Washington slept here is one thing. Lee Harvey Oswald, you know, laid his troubled head here is another thing entirely.
Well, the rooming house on Beckley where he was living at the day of the assassination, the family still owns it. And in fact, it's currently for sale, but they owned it. They've owned it, you know, since 1963. I think a lot of the other properties, the one on Elsbeth that was recently torn down, obviously that fell into different hands. And then the one on, Neely Street, that's gone through several owners as well. But even if you drive by them, you know, they look pretty much the same as they did, you know, back in 1963, which is amazing for Dallas, definitely.
Well, and there are still buildings that were places that Oswald went to and, you know, conducted business in, like the Spiral Diner restaurant there. That was the Reno Speedwash, and it's where Oswald did his laundry. So, I mean, I know that sounds kind of silly, but if you're literally looking for where these people walked, where their footsteps went, at the end of further down on Beckley, there's a veterinarian office that used to be a steak and egg kitchen.
You should also mention the Ruth Payne House in Irving,
where his
wife Marina was staying, living with their
since they were
child and,
separated,
and where he went the night before. November 22nd to pick up the rifle.
The home has been purchased by the city of Irving, and my counterpart in Irving, Kevin Kendra, has been deeply involved in the restoration process, and it should be ready with an interpretive portion to it for people to see starting in November. But it's a fascinating story, and it's absolutely chilling to hear the account. They asked Ruth Payne, and they said, yeah, Lee came over to visit, you know, the family for a little bit. And they said, did he have a rifle? And he said, yeah, we kept it in the garage over here under this blanket. And they went to the garage and the, you know, blanket was gone.
There.
Yeah.
The rifle was gone. Yeah, and I guess Ruth Payne had a bad feeling about Lee Harvey Oswald from the beginning and was happy to have Marina Oswald stay with her but didn't want Lee spending the night there.
Yeah, all conspiracies aside, he was apparently a rough guy and there was domestic violence in the family. So it was, you know, a matter of preservation to be staying with someone safe.
How does it work for neighbors in Irving who live – this is a residential neighborhood where this house was and is located, right? Is it – there's a little museum sort of facility in on a residential street?
Yeah, I believe that's right. I don't know how that's going to play out in the neighborhood, but presumably they had meetings with homeowners in the area to manage any kind of concerns that might have happened. Maybe Kevin will call us and let us know.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now to Jim in Dallas. Hey, Jim.
Thanks. I was just curious if they had discovered any particular reason that Oswald went to the Texas Theater. I just seemed odd to me.
He was just trying to find a place to hide out, I believe. You know, this is right after he had shot Tippit on 10th and
Officer
Patton.
Officer J.D. Tippit.
Correct. And so, you know, he was running down Jefferson. A lot of eyewitnesses, you know, saw him. You had mentioned the record store before. And so I think he was just – he was trying to find kind of a dark, quiet place where he could maybe hide out for a little bit and let – you know, the commotion kind of quiet down a little bit. And obviously there were too many people that saw him and kind of didn't have a good feeling about what was going on. So that's obviously where he got caught, was at the Texas Theater.
And Jim, I'm glad you brought that up because we'll talk more about the Texas Theater and its history after this with John Slate, City Archivist for the City of Dallas, Willis Winters, Director of the Dallas Park and Recreation Department, and Mark Doty, Historic Preservation Officer for the City of Dallas. They're all involved in two new books, one called Dealey Plaza and the other called John F. Kennedy Sites in Dallas and Fort Worth. You can join us by calling 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, accepting applications for this fall to design your own Master of Liberal Studies degree at SMU with concentrations in global studies, creative writing, and organizational dynamics. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Mark Doty, who is Historic Preservation Officer for the City of Dallas, Willis Winters, Director of the Dallas Park and Recreation Department, and John H. Slate, City Archivist for Dallas. They are all, so Slate and Doty are co-authors of a book called John F. Kennedy Sites in Dallas-Fort Worth, and Slate and Winters are co-authors of a book called Dealey Plaza. I'm not sure we've ever had quite this configuration of two books, three authors, one person who's responsible for both. So.
Mark should be sitting in the middle here. I mean,
John should be sitting in the middle. Exactly.
Because he's the common element.
Well, what's really interesting about it is that whenever Willis and John pitched Dealey Plaza originally, they were just going to put a chapter at the end of JFK Sites. It wasn't going to be this full-blown book. And I think the publishing company was like, hey, would y'all be interested in maybe making this a full-blown book? And John came to me one afternoon and was like, hey, would you like to co-author this with me? And I was like, only for you, John Slate, would I do this. Only for you.
A lot of material there.
There was a lot of material.
Do you need the next 8 months of your life is his real question.
Well yeah, because I had just come off Lost Dallas, and so I was trying to maybe take a little break, but this was kind of a too good of an opportunity to pass up, definitely.
Well, it couldn't have happened without both of you guys, so thanks.
There are some great pictures in the Kennedy Sites book of the many iterations of the Texas Theater. Because I suppose today it looks more like itself in 1963 than it did before and certainly after. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it was built and opened up in 1931. Howard Hughes, actually, who was the Houston billionaire, built it. And it was a 2,000-seat auditorium, Italian Renaissance. If you see the pictures of it on opening night, it looks a lot different than it does now. It had a great tower on it. It had very intricate brickwork. Then what happened by the 1960s, and really 63, they had painted over the facade and put the kind of the more iconic Texas sign up there now. And then after the assassination, they were trying to kind of distance themselves a little bit, you know, from that notoriety, I believe. And so they put this really horrendous slip cover on
ugly,
it. They took the marquee off. They took the sign. They cut off part of the tower. And then it was whenever Oliver Stone came to town in 1991 to start filming JFK that he actually paid to have that slipcover taken off and then recreate really hastily, you know, a marquee and a sign to give it kind of that look for whenever he was filming his movie JFK.
Yeah, for all the trouble he caused filming in town, that was one of the really, really good things that he did. And he recreated the Texas sign, which was later, I think, they made a more permanent version of it.
Right. The good thing about the Texas is that it is a City of Dallas landmark, so it has that protection to where it can't be torn down. And so over the years, I've been at the city for 7 years, and I've been able to see them put a more permanent marquee on it, the way that it looked, and then they did go back with the Texas sign. And so the unfortunate thing is the interior, it was Italian Renaissance, both the exterior and the interior. And unfortunately, that interior in the 60s after the assassination, they just stuccoed all over it. I mean, it's all white stucco on the interior. If you walk in the Texas Theater, there's a little part of it that they have a piece of plexiglass over that you can see what the original detailing was. Mm. And if it's not impossible to do, it would cost a lot of money to try to restore the interior of that building, which is really unfortunate. But they've done a really good job down there with it being the.
It's a great theater, and the programming is fantastic there.
Oliver Stone also put temporarily a hurt sign back on the Texas School Book Depository building, right?
I don't know about it.
Am I wrong about that? There was one on the day. There was a sign for Hertz Automobiles or Hertz Auto Rentals.
Yeah, that it had been placed up there temporarily for the film.
But. And there were a number of signs. Hertz was the sign in 1963, but I think we documented at least three other signs over the years. It used to be on top of the building, all again pointing towards the Fort Worth Pike Highway as it came into downtown into the Triple Underpass, I think.
Yeah, there's a tire company.
Royal Tires. Yeah.
Royal Tires, Ford,
yeah,
that kind of thing.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now to Wayne in Dallas. Hi, Wayne.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good. I have a comment. Have any of your guests done any research with the Holy Trinity Catholic Church? They were the ones who sent a priest to do last rites for the president, and apparently there are records there, and I just wondered if those had been looked at. And the other statement I would make is that I was a child when Kennedy was assassinated in Dallas, and the whole thing about them flying from Fort Worth to Dallas was just kind of a political thing. It was just to kind of, you know, nod to both cities.
Huh. Interesting. Well, thanks so much for your call, Wayne. Do y'all know anything about the records that might exist at Holy Trinity?
I'm presuming he's talking about the Holy Trinity that's on Oak Lawn.
In the neighborhood, so that's
guess. No, I'm not familiar with the records.
That wasn't really part of our research. We were more interested in the physical history of Dealey Plaza, not a collateral aspect of the event itself. I will say, though, that the priest married my sister at Holy Trinity very soon after that.
Performed the ceremony. 1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to John in Fort Worth. Hey, John.
Hey, how are you?
Great, thank you.
I was just listening to your program, found it interesting in that I was a child of 14 when the president visited, and my brother and I persuaded our mother to allow us to skip school that day and stand on the corner on Lemon Avenue near the old Delman Theater. And, gosh, listening to your program, it just brought it all back. It was so many years ago, but the memory is so fresh. I remember the car coming by, the motorcycle officer. If I had reached out, I could have touched him. He was so close. And seeing the president and seeing the first lady there in her pink outfit, it was a sight to behold. And then right after that, we turned around and walked across the parking lot, entered a cafeteria, and a few minutes later heard over the radio that there had been some kind of turmoil, which, of course, we all know turned out to be the assassination.
Well, so, thank you so much for sharing
that story.
Yeah, I really appreciate that.
That's an extraordinary memory. I actually have a friend who's must have stood one half block south of there at Lemon Avenue in Lomo Alto, also took off at school very close to this gentleman.
Yeah, it seems, you know, if there were, as Mark, I think you mentioned earlier, an estimated 200,000 people, there are a lot of people in this part of the country who, if they don't have memories themselves, their mom or dad or their grandparents have a memory to share.
In fact, my parents, their first date was that night. And so they remember, obviously they remember it for him, you know,
that,
being assassinated.
That wasn't a killer for the... for their date.
Right, exactly, yeah. Well, they actually went to, I think they went to go see The Birds, the Alfred Hitchcock movie, at a movie theater in Stanford, Texas. So maybe it was the JFK. But that was their first date. So that's always a special, you know, place in their heart, obviously, for many different reasons.
Why is the Grassy Knoll called the Grassy Knoll? Because it wasn't, you know, we almost use it with capital letters these days when we say Grassy Knoll. But it was just one reporter's term, right?
I recounted it as best as I've been able to find, and it was one reporter named Merriman Smith who mentioned it, and it was just sort of picked up and came from there. But it just shows where one tiny piece of reportage, you know, just can become international.
And it's always referred to with capital letters G and K. It's almost like it's sacred.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and Dealey Plaza has become a sort of sacred space, I think, for a lot of people. I mean, it is interesting if you go down there, people seem to be fairly reverent when they're wandering around, yeah. Which is interesting 50 years later.
Yeah.
Well, interestingly enough, the architecture that was placed there in the late 30s, the National Youth Administration work that produced the pergolas and the beautiful pools that are there, I think, add a very reflective feel to it. And so, oddly enough, it kind of fits. It
feels like a monument, like a national – I mean, it is a national historic landmark from a historical standpoint, but it feels like almost a Civil War battlefield site when you enter the site with the incredible monuments and memorials and markers. You feel like you're in a intensely – and reverent is a great word, historical space. It's something, you know, that something incredibly important and impactful to our lives has happened there. And that's the feel that it has to me, visiting a place like Gettysburg or Antietam.
And people seem to have mixed emotions, mixed feelings about the Philip Johnson Kennedy Memorial. Some people, I think, are fond of it. Other people feel like they just can't connect with it.
I think there was even a discussion, you know, a couple years ago about trying to, you know, dress it up or, you know, add elements to it to make it, you know, more, I guess, you know, help people understand the experience of what Johnson was trying to come from it. I personally like it because it's, you know, it is an open tomb and it's supposed to have this feeling of, you know, emptiness. And that's really what kind of reflective of, I think, how Dallas and the nation felt after that day. So
it's a love it or hate it monument, and for sure. But it one thing that I make a point of in the book is that this was that the design was shown to the Kennedys. The Kennedy family, you know, more or less authorized it and said we think that it would be fitting. And it's just like Mark says, it's an empty box because that's how people felt.
Mm-hmm.
It, something's missing, and that was our president.
Well, I understand everything, all the design thought that went into that on Johnson's part. But as an architect myself, I think it's probably one of his least successful works of architecture that he's done anywhere. I don't get the feeling that going into the monument that I get when I step foot into Dealey Plaza.
Is there public access to Rose Hill Cemetery these days? Can people go and see Lee Harvey Oswald's tombstone?
I think it's open, but I'm not sure about actual trying to get to the area. I think they purposely don't mention where people are.
Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily want it to be overrun by people who are there to sort of take a photograph.
Yeah, I mean, that's in a lot of cemeteries that you just purposely don't say where Wild Bill Hickok is or whoever. I don't know, but...
Why is it important for us as a society to preserve even sites that we associate with, in this case, one of the darkest hours in local history?
Well, I think because it is part of our local history. I mean, I think that's one of those defining moments in Dallas's history. And the fact that we have still so much of it still standing is amazing to me. In fact, I think really the only neighborhood that is pretty much been obliterated is that area at 10th and Patton where Officer Tippett was shot. You know, that's the new campus for Adamson High School. But really, if you walk down Jefferson Boulevard, you know, walk through Dealey Plaza, if you go to Old City Hall, down the ramp at the old jail, you know, where Oswald was shot that Sunday morning. I mean, it's pretty much intact and untouched for the most part. And again, for it to be that way in Dallas is really amazing.
And Chris, there's a movement right now. Preservation Dallas is analyzing these peripheral sites to Dealey Plaza that are in Mark and John's book, the JFK sites, the houses, the rooming houses in Oak Cliff, the jail in the old Dallas Municipal Building where Oswald was taken. Held, and then where he was shot on the ramp in the basement. There's a lot of interest right now in getting these unrelated sites, physically unrelated sites, onto the National Register of Historic Places just for the specific purpose of preservation because of the apartment building on Elsbeth that was demolished earlier this year.
And, you know, the really good thing is that a lot of these places are already protected. You know, Willis had mentioned that Dealey Plaza is a National Historic Landmark, so that has local protection, national protection. Texas Theater is protected. Old City Hall is protected. Even the boarding house on Beckley, that's part of the Lake Cliff Historic District, so that is locally protected as well. But it is a lot of these, you know, other boarding houses and, you know, periphery sites that don't have any protection right now that they're really trying to call attention to.
Mark Doty is Historic Preservation Officer for the City of Dallas and co-author, along with John Slate, of the new book, John F. Kennedy Sites in Dallas-Fort Worth. John Slate, of course, is, goodness, I'm losing all my papers here, is co-author also of Willis Winter's Dealey Plaza, and he is City Archivist for the City of Dallas. Gentlemen, thank you all so much for being here. Really appreciate it.
A pleasure.
Pleasure.
Today's show was engineered by Shelley Canavy, podcast produced by Christine McConnell. We had help from Christina Martinez on the phones. Lindsay Connect produced the show, and Jeff Whittington is executive producer. We always welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions. Email those to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.